Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Up the escalation ladder, NATO inches closer to war with Russia in a desperate attempt to salvage its failing Ukraine project. Also, will the American people elect a convicted felon president? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick this off with George in Budapest. George, we have this meme regarding Ukraine. It's been persistent over the last few months, is that Ukraine is on its last legs. We keep hearing that. But we also see NATO escalating. The problem is here is this escalation is not directed, and I'm talking about words coming from the British, the French, the Germans, etc., particularly the Americans. This is not really to salvage their Ukraine project. It is to inflict a strategic failure, defeat on Russia. There are two different things here. This escalation, the destruction of these early warning radars, that has nothing to do with the battlefield in Ukraine. This is a challenge, a NATO, direct NATO challenge to Russia. These are two things, different things going on simultaneously. Your thoughts?
Well, you're right, Peter, but in a sense that this was already baked in to the the reasons why Russia launched the special military operation in Ukraine. The problem for Russia was not Ukraine by itself, because of course Ukraine by itself does not pose any real strategic threat to Russia. It's just much smaller, much more limited in resources and so on. It's Ukraine in NATO, Ukraine as a battering ram for NATO. That's what posed the problem for Russia, and that's really becoming ever more explicit now. And so we're now going step by step towards this direct involvement by the NATO powers inside Russia. And we can see that each time they make this step, it's always the provision saying, well, it's going to be very, very limited. Don't worry about anything. So, we'll provide them with weapons, but it has to be only in Ukrainian territory. All right, you can attack territory like Crimea, but not Russia proper. So now they said, okay, you can attack Russia proper, but it has to be somewhere close to the Kharkov region. So at each step, they go along, and of course, as soon as they've said, oh, it has to be limited near to the Kharkov region, along comes Zelensky and all his champions in Washington and in NATO. So, oh, that's not enough. It has to be unrestricted. And of course, most of America's partners have said, yeah, we put no restrictions at all on anything that we've provided. So that's the next step, is that, well, let's lift that restriction. So it's ever, as you said, inch by inch is becoming a direct war between NATO and Russia.
Well, Martin, I look at this in a very simple way. I mean, what is the difference in hitting inside of Russia's territory close to Kharkov? What is the difference in hitting, Moscow? It's Russian soil. There is no difference here, okay? I don't understand why they think that there's an invidious difference. There isn't here. What's really interesting to me is that the NATO thinks they can do this risk-free, which is very, very dangerous, because the entire theory and practice of deterrence, nuclear deterrence here, is being rapidly degraded. Martin.
Yeah, the risk-free thing is very, very worrying. When you hear people like David Cameron, who was asked by a journalist, well, what happens after we strike into real Russia territory, And his response was, Russia just has to pull out of Ukraine. That's really the only solution. The fact that this bigoted view, this incredibly blinkered view, that there are no other options for Russia and that the West has the upper hand, is really dangerous and really stupid. And now we are beginning to see, how close now we are edging towards the abyss. We keep talking about this on this show, how close we're getting to a World War III scenario. We've talked about it largely as a theoretical subject. I think perhaps at some point, it's going to be beyond that, because You say there's no difference between the Russian side of the border and in Ukraine. I think there is, Peter. I really do think there is. I think for the Russian people there is. I think for Putin there is. How much further can we continue with storm shadows being fired by British soldiers?
No, I think we're agreeing with each other here on this. I mean, because hitting Russian soil is hitting Russian soil. You know, if it's near the border, you know, they're somehow different. It's not different. It's the same thing. And George, what's important here? This is NATO weaponry. Largely controlled by NATO personnel if they're soldiers or contractors. And very importantly, it's the satellite assistance that these weapons need. Those are definitely NATO, probably American almost exclusively. This is Russia versus NATO, NATO versus Russia. Ukraine is suddenly out of the equation here.
That's exactly right, Peter. And these kinds of long-range missile attacks inside Russia, and even long-range drone attacks, they can only succeed if they are guided by satellite systems. There's no way you can just simply lob a drone and magically hits a target close to the Kazakhstan border. That requires satellite guidance. The only way that you can get satellite guidance is through NATO and the United States. So obviously, the NATO powers, chiefly the United States, already involved in firing drones and missiles on behalf of Ukraine. Also, let's keep in mind, the United States has not said that Ukraine cannot fire missiles beyond this limit that we're talking about, or it has to be somewhere close to the border. They have not said that. They have just simply said that, we would prefer it if you would limit it there, but we don't take part in any detailed military planning. It's up to Ukraine to decide how it's going to defend itself. And Ukraine has the right to defend itself. We don't tell Ukraine what to do. So in fact, that's just simply media hype to say, oh, well, it's all very, very limited.
It's
very, very
well, restricted.
Aren't any limits.
It's patently false. It's a lie. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the level of encryption that you need to understand to guide these drones and missiles, that is highly secret. They're not passing that on to the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians are being given that information. Maybe they hit a button, but it's already pre-programmed. The algorithm is there. Martin, it's patently obvious, something that George and I, and I think you were at the time, we discussed that it's only a matter of time before Article 5 of the NATO treaty is being tested. Now, it could go in many, many different directions here. There's a gross misreading of what it means. It's not automatic. I mean, member countries can decide if they want to participate in it. It's not, you know, somebody flips a switch here, but and it will test the membership of NATO. But I think this is amazingly reckless, because once, you know, the first bullet is fired, war is very unpredictable. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, it only takes one bullet, and it only takes one miscalculated decision on the West. And I wonder if bombing those radar installations was really a mistake. I really do wonder whether we will see in the coming days.
Martin, George, that is the biggest thing that has happened in this conflict. And it's not given the coverage that is really necessary. When I came across that, George and I talked about it separately, I was horrified by it. I still am horrified by it. Martin.
And, you know, when such things happen, you have to wonder, have we passed the Article 5 debate now? You know, are we beyond that now? I mean, as some people say, the British MP said, others are saying now, we are now at war with Russia. You know, we are firing rockets at Russian civilians and soldiers. The question is, you know, what does it take? What does it take for Putin to send a message back that you've gone over a line? I'm sure he will be very careful when he does this. I'm sure he will exercise an extraordinary amount of caution. But at some point, he has to do something. And if you look at some of the realistic, plausible targets that he could hit, if he gets any more of this ordnance thrown over the border and Russian people, Russian civilians are being killed, you know, perhaps the NATO installation in Germany, the main headquarters, would be a legitimate target.
Well, I mean, what we have right now, George, to go back to history, is that from September 1939 to May of 1940, we had something that was called the phony war. I think we're in that right now. We're in a state of war, But we haven't seen a major escalation. I think we're about to see that right now, because this is an untenable situation. The Russians will not compromise their security. This is something, and you know, what will it be? Satellites being shot out? I think that's the most obvious one here. Does that count for invoking Article 5? Nobody knows. George.
That's exactly right. I would have thought hitting the satellites would be the most logical first step. Hitting drones in the Black Sea would also be the spy drones in the Black Sea would be a logical step. It's clear that the NATO powers have no idea other than Putin is going to capitulate. I mean, this is what Martin was saying about what David Cameron said. Well, you know, what if this doesn't work? Well, you know, that he has to just simply withdraw from Ukraine. That isn't going to happen. Russia is not going to capitulate. So therefore, there has to be a next step, because Russia cannot just simply allow NATO to be in essentially shooting and killing Russians on Russian soil. So there has to be a next step. And I think that we are precisely on the brink of a world war. And that's incidentally what, in a remarkable speech yesterday by Viktor Orban, who said, this is the third time we Hungarians are being pushed into a war with Russia. Third time. 1914, 1941, and now, and we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it for the third time. And I think he's the first leader who has explicitly said, this is the same project, World War I, World War II, World War III. We're mobilizing Europe against Russia. And Orban said, well, you know, we don't want to be a part of it for a third
time.
Well,
you know, a little self-advertisement. George and I did an extensive video on this in our podcast, The Goggle, and I refer people to it because we talk about it at great length, what he just said. You know, Martin, you know, Britain is at war with Russia. This is what we're being told. Well, maybe the British will feel what war is like again, because they're inflicting violence upon the Russian citizenry that hasn't happened yet in Britain. It could.
Yeah, it could. I refer you back to a show we did a couple of months ago when you asked me what my opinion would be of the NATO birthday party, you know, and I said, expect a lot of fake news. Are we experiencing the fake news now here with rumors that I've heard in the last week that NATO is planning something big, you know, and this is being fed to a few gullible journalists and it's being pumped up into something?
Well, Martin, I think that's one of the things that the three of us have been doing, been pushing back against this here. Well, this is all political posturing. It doesn't mean it doesn't have consequences, but it is political posturing. That's why they're not thinking strategically, they're thinking politically, and we should all be terrified of this process they're going through. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
Largest democracy votes, the rest of the planet watches. In an emerging multipolar world, India's voice matters. But who will be the power behind it? Watch as almost 1 billion people decide, and billions more react.
Wars are a result of lies. If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
The importance of WikiLeaks can never be overstated. That transparency is an extraordinary journalistic achievement.
They just succeeded in finding documents that existed and making them available to the world public. I mean, what could be more honorable than that?
By publishing information and sharing information with the public, he was exercising the right to free speech. He did so in the public interest.
I've watched a tsunami of lies and smear engulf him endlessly, vindictively, perfidiously. and I know why they smeared him.
Isn't it ironic that no one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice? But the great truth teller sits behind bars, waiting 175 years a virtual death sentence. Are we going to let that stand?
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, George, you know, we have for the first time in American history, a former president convicted on 34 counts. He is legally right now a felon, but he also is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party in the 2024 election. Your thoughts on this, because, you know, the way it's being pitched right now by liberal media primarily is that no one will vote for a convicted felon. I think that's going to be tested very seriously. Go ahead, George.
I agree with you, Peter. But it's very interesting that and it ties in with what we were talking about in the first half of the show, which is the United States has become a completely reckless, irresponsible, useless power in the world. I mean, you're doing things no one would have dreamt of, provoking a world war, nuclear apocalypse. And here you have the Democratic Party, which has first of all spent years essentially for purposes of domestic politics, whipping up a totally ridiculous hysteria about Russian interference in American domestic politics, impeaching a president for that, and making totally reckless, irresponsible attacks on a president. Oh, he's working for Russia. So now they've gone to that extra step and they've said, okay, he's a convicted felon. And think, well, that'll win us an election, you know, because now he's always a convicted, 34 charges, unanimous jury. Well, as you said, Peter, I don't think that's not a deal breaker. So then you say, well, what's next? Well, I think what's next is that that Democratic judge and the Democratic prosecutors in Manhattan are going to push for an imprisonment on July the 11th. 1 week before the Republican nomination, they're going to push to imprison Donald Trump, because they're going to say, by then they're going to realize they'll be looking at the polls and they'll say this hasn't done anything to damage Trump. Yeah, exactly. Well, we have to go to the next step.
Well, what it did was in one day, I might get the number wrong, like $36 million in small donations went into his campaign. That was the reaction here. You know, Martin, if this was happening in any other country, the Undertaker, Blinken, as I call him, he would be calling that country, you know, the violation of the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, you know, freedom of speech. But no, the State Department isn't going to react to what's going on in New York, I guess, here. I mean, the double standard is so glaring. And I mean, in this administration, they're pretty rich in the double standards category here, Martin.
Yeah, but you've hit the nail on the head, Peter. You know, any other country, I mean, the Europeans, you know, we looked at Bill Clinton's messing around with Monica Lewinsky in the White House. And the French were just thought of it as, well, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, every French president has oral sex with his interns. You know, I think there's a similar thing going on here across the world, particularly in Europe. You know, we look at this case against Trump and we think, for goodness sake, you know, he's a wealthy guy who got his lawyers to pay off people who were blackmailing him. It happens all the time. I mean, I've done so many investigations with wealthy people over my career. You know, that's why you employ lawyers.
It's called a nuisance suit. It happens all of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a big deal. This particular case isn't really a big deal, but it could be the thin end of the wedge. It could create momentum. And as George quite rightly says, you know, the Democrats will be looking at the polls thinking, well, this hasn't really had much impact. We really need to crank it up a bit. But we're going into completely uncharted waters. I mean, America, as a Brit, it gives me great pleasure to say America is a very young country. And, you know, so much of this is unprecedented. There's no history behind it. And it'll be really interesting to see, can we have a president in jail? I think if he goes to jail, that just, for me, I'd put my mum's savings on a landslide.
Well, you know, Martin, before we get there, you know, when Trump met with the media after the verdict was given and read out to him, there was a heckler in the crowd. Now, I don't know if it was a Fed or it was a Trump support, and we'll never probably know. But it was yelled out, civil war, which is really, really remarkable and really scary. You know, George, what they tried to do in this ridiculous trial, I don't know. I think we're pretty smart guys here. Our audience is pretty smart, but I've never understood what this case was really about. What was the harm? I don't know what it was, okay? Particularly since, you know, New York knew a lot about Donald Trump's personality and character for decades right now. George, being in the real estate sector in New York, which is, you know, it's not really pristine, if you know what I mean. So Donald Trump is in business in New York for 50 years and he never charged with a crime. And then suddenly this, okay, what this is saying is that Donald Trump not necessarily is corrupt, but the legal system is corrupt.
That's exactly right, Peter, because this ridiculous thing, because, you know, anyone who, you know, the prosecutors, anyone try to explain to a man on the street what exactly is the crime, what is it that you're saying Trump has done, he would be unable to do it because nobody's able to do it. You know, legal experts are unable to explain what the crime here is. I mean, yeah, he paid somebody off. That's not illegal. So to make this into a 34-count felony, they had to do absurd, convoluted contortions to make it sound that he had committed these crimes. But on top of that, you have also a New York court that tries to bankrupt him. They hit him with a $500 million fine for alleging fraud when no one has come forward to say that they'd been defrauded. No one has come forward to say they'd lost any money. No one was defrauded. Again, a convoluted theory that was uniquely applied to Trump. So as was this case, you know, there's no record anywhere of anyone being prosecuted for the crimes that Trump has just been convicted of. No record of anyone being found guilty of fraud under that New York statute that was used against him. And then we've got all the others with all this. He had official classified documents. Every president has classified documents. So people can see this and say, you're twisting, manipulating the legal system to go after one man. Well, that's what the American Republic was founded to oppose. You know, we don't have bills of attainders. You don't manipulate the law just to go after one person. So essentially, and this is, I think, larger than Democrats, they've trashed the system, they've trashed the laws, they've trashed the courts in order to win an election. Well, that's a very dangerous game to play, and I think it's going to blow up in their face.
It's a bit of an echo of 2016, Martin, because, you know, the Clinton administration, Clinton campaign, employed their Pied Piper strategy. You know, they actually pushed him up. I mean, if we look at the media coverage over the last, obviously in the last few days, but, you know, watching Trump's legal travails, you know, he's getting a lot of free coverage, okay? And as absurd of these cases are, and they all are absurd, you know, it pumps him up. I mean, the average person, as George has pointed out, it looks like you're just going after this guy, okay?
Yeah.
And you're trashing the law in the process, Martin.
But nobody will appreciate that more than Trump himself. He will understand the power of that free media oxygen, and will use it to his best devices. You mentioned 2016. I think it's more than resonates with 2016. I think it's looking like a carbon copy, and we will have to wait and see whether voters use the same rationale now as they did in 2016. A lot of Democrats hated Hillary and just didn't want her in at any cost, and were prepared to even cross the aisle and vote for Trump just to reform the Democratic Party and clean up this corruption image. Exactly the same thing's happening in Britain with the Conservative Party. Everyone who knows the Conservative Party is going to fall in a couple of weeks' time, and everyone's talking about it being a good thing because we need at least one term for the Conservatives to reform and come up, you know, come back with a cleaner, more modern image which people will respond to. I think if only a quarter of regular Democrat voters see the wood for the trees, actually can see what's going on here with this witch hunt, I think we're looking at a Trump coming back into the White House. I think there's no question of that. You know,
it's I'm of the firm conviction if he does win the election, they still won't let him get inaugurated. But that's a topic for another program here. George, I mean, look at the calculus here. Joe Biden didn't have to fight a primary. It looks like it's going to be a virtual convention. It's, you know, basically the basement strategy. Okay, fine. But no one loves Joe Biden. There are a lot of people that dislike him, but no one loves Joe Biden. Juxtapose that to Donald Trump. Yeah, a lot of people hate Donald Trump, but a lot of people love Donald Trump. How do you square that? That's very asymmetrical.
Well, I think that's exactly right. That's why to this day, there are so many questions about that 2020 election, because we're asked to believe 81 million Americans voted for this man that nobody loves, nobody likes. He's always been a Washington political hack, a glad hand, a crook. And we're asked to believe he got 16 million more votes than Barack Obama, who did indeed inspire many people to go out and vote for the first time. That's really the problem. And now it's compounded by the perception that he knows he can't win in a fair and square fight. And so he's rigging the system. Well, nobody likes a cheat. You know, if you're going into a tennis tournament and then you spike the drink of your opponent, nobody's going to say, hey, you won fair and square. And that's really how Biden is playing it. So this new ad that the Republicans are running, where Biden is giving this kind of evil grin when he's asked, hey, Trump is saying you were behind this legal troubles. And he says, and he just gives this big evil grin. They're going to play that over and over again. And they're going to say, yeah, Biden is kind of tacitly admitting, hey, I'm cheating and I deserve to be president because I'm cheating. He's a very, very unlikable man.
Yes. And he's thrown all the resources of his administration behind this. OK, Martin, just to finish up here, you know, we could do the British elections later, but it's a pathetic commentary that this election in the United States is turning out to be about personalities, who you like and who you dislike. As the country is going to hell in a handbasket, as George pointed out, with all these foreign policy crises going on, we're asked to judge or pick between a candidate that is basically senile and a colorful a real estate mogul. Kind of pathetic. Go ahead.
TV celebrity, yeah, throw that in as well. Yeah, unfortunately, we've come to this stage, we've come to this point where the system doesn't really allow us to choose any other candidate. Yeah. You know, it's boiled down to the stupid and the corrupt, or wherever, whichever way you want to throw it. George's point is very important, though. Biden isn't liked. People don't like Biden. So he's only got policies, you know, or skullduggery, you know, cheating. Whereas on the Trump side, you've got personality and policies and controversy.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I think, unfortunately, I'm going to have to start ending all of these programs. Why every time we vote, we get John McCain? That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.